This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, sitting in for Brooke Gladstone. In the months following his election loss, as he made baseless accusations of election fraud, President Trump floated a dangerous idea.
Had Mike Pence had the courage to send it back to the legislatures, you would have had a different outcome, in my opinion.
Is that what you told him to do?
It was a troubling talking point about a troubling claim that then-Vice President Mike Pence had the power to overturn the 2020 presidential election in Trump's favor. That same claim brought insurrectionists to the Capitol on January 6th. And as of this week, it's been given new context.
It's a two-page memo marked privileged and confidential. January 6th scenario is the title.
That memo, made public in Bob Woodward and Robert Costa's new book, Peril, outlines a six-step plan for how Pence could refuse to tally votes from states with, quote, multiple slates of electors. That would throw the final decision to the House of Representatives, which was then controlled by Republicans. And that election overturn plan was written and proposed to Pence on January 5th by John Eastman, an attorney advising Trump. Eastman isn't a household name, but he's come up on the Media before. In 2020, he was pushing another false theory, birtherism. Birthers tried to call President Obama's right to hold the highest office into question, and birtherism resurfaced around Kamala Harris's eligibility.
I heard it today that she doesn't meet the requirements.
That was, of course, false. Kamala Harris is a U.S. citizen and fully eligible to serve as vice president. But that didn't stop that false claim about her from seeping into the public conversation through a Newsweek op-ed written by John Eastman, an op-ed that Newsweek later apologized for. Last summer, Brooke spoke with Slate's Mark Joseph Stern, who described the origins of this birtherism falsehood and how Eastman and his organization, the Claremont Institute, used the media to spread it.
This is a really old canard, and unfortunately, it's still with us.
Stern tracked the birtherism lie all the way back to an 1857 Supreme Court decision.
We have to go to the Dred Scott decision in 1857, which was the notorious Supreme Court ruling that said that Black people could not be citizens of the United States, that they had no rights that the white man was bound to respect. They are an inferior order, the Supreme Court said, and so they simply cannot obtain citizenship in this nation. Overt racism of the most rank and abhorrent kind. And the Dred Scott decision was one of the sparks of the Civil War, right? And after that Civil War, the nation passed a constitutional amendment, the 14th Amendment, whose very first sentence is a direct rebuke to Dred Scott.
What's it say?
It says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. It doesn't just say they will become citizens. These people have always been citizens, and we are now ensuring that their citizenship cannot be questioned. Nice idea. Here we are in 2020. It's still getting questioned.
So what is new about the Kamala birther lie?
Basically nothing, because even though we seem to settle the question of birthright citizenship once and for all, when the first Black senator was sent to Congress in 1870, Hiram Revels, some racist senators tried to deny him his seat. To be a senator, you have to have had American citizenship for at least 9 years. So these racist congressmen said, we only passed the 14th Amendment 2 years ago. That was when this guy got citizenship. That was obviously rejected almost out of hand by the senators who had just passed the 14th Amendment, who were still there in the Senate. And they were able to say pretty definitively, no, we meant to say that these folks have always been citizens. What we did was confirm a truth that had been widely recognized up until Dred Scott reversed it.
Could you give me a quick summary of the differences between the Obama birther lie and the Harris birther lie?
The Obama birther lie asked not if he was an American citizen, but just whether he was natural born. The Kamala lie asked if she is a citizen at all.
So what is the argument being presented by such people as John Eastman of the Claremont Institute in Newsweek? The title of his op-ed was almost polite. Some questions for Kamala Harris about eligibility.
Eastman's op-ed presents an argument that he has been making for many years, that those four words, subject to the jurisdiction, means something totally different from what everybody understood them to mean in 1868. So back up a little. Kamala Harris's parents were immigrants to the United States. They were both here on visas. No laws broken. Of course, individuals coming to the United States on visas can have children here. And it has long been understood that those children become American citizens because they are born on American soil and they don't fall into the exceptions laid out by Congress when it passed the 14th Amendment. But John Eastman has a different theory. He thinks that the words subject to the jurisdiction have this secret meaning, and that is that you have to owe your allegiance exclusively to the United States in order to pass on citizenship to your child, even if your child is born in the United States. He says that because Kamala Harris's parents were foreign nationals when she was born, they owed their allegiance to other countries. And so they were unable to pass along citizenship to Kamala because they were not fully subject to American jurisdiction. Instead, they were subject to the jurisdiction of India and Jamaica.
But Mark, this was in Newsweek. It was an op-ed. The Claremont Institute, which you talk about, where Eastman is a senior fellow. What is the Claremont Institute?
So the Claremont Institute is a conservative think tank, although I think think tank is a bit of a misnomer here. It's located in California. It was founded by four students of a guy named Harry Jaffa, who was a kind of Goldwater conservative in the 60s and 70s. This was founded in 1979. And the idea was to spread these Goldwater-esque ideas to revive the celebration of American nationalism and American exceptionalism at a time when conservatives perceived it to be on the decline. This was the later part of Jimmy Carter's presidency, the Malaise speech, yada, yada. And so the Claremont Institute burst onto the scene and tried to kind of intellectualize theories about American nationalism and American identity that had been a little bit further on the fringe of the right, but were at that stage making their way to the center of the GOP.
But then it started to evolve, let's say, in the 90s and in the early 2000s.
I would say devolve is maybe the better word. Look, you know, I don't think the Claremont Institute was ever totally free of nativism, right? The very ideas that it was promoting had a bit of an undercurrent of white national identity, in my view. But after Jaffa died, and after the conservative movement fully embraced some of these nationalistic ideas, the Claremont Institute moved further and further to the right, onto the fringe. And instead of just talking about American nationalism, it would talk about almost an American ethnic identity, who is truly American and who is an interloper. And its main course of attack here was against immigrants, mostly from Mexico, Central America, what it deemed to be inferior countries with inferior orders, in the words of the Dred Scott decision.
You're being a little nice here. And in your article, you called it a racist fever swamp with deep connections to the conspiratorial alt-right, that it granted a fellowship to a guy named Jack Posobiec, who helped promote the Pizzagate conspiracy theory. This is the idea that the Democratic Party is involved in some sort of child sex ring.
So in the last 10 years, it has just collapsed into insane, paranoid, alt-right terror of non-white people. And almost all of its scholarship is directed toward presenting these outrageous theories about why non-white people are not really Americans. And especially during the Trump presidency, it has fully embraced the wackiest and most dangerous conspiratorial elements of the sort of Trumpian movement, including Pizzagate.
And you say that few, if any, of the supporters of the birtherism lie lack connections to the Claremont Institute. That includes Eastman, who wrote the op-ed questioning Kamala Harris's eligibility in Newsweek, and also Josh Hammer, who was the Newsweek editor who commissioned the piece, is a former fellow at the Institute. It seems like when it comes to birtherism, all roads lead to Claremont.
Michael Anton, who wrote a piece arguing against birthright citizenship in the Washington Post in 2018, is, guess what, a senior fellow there as well. And by the way, the first scholar to really pitch this idea that the children of immigrants do not get birthright citizenship in the United States, he was a Claremont scholar. His name was Edward Erler. He wrote this book that was just outwardly racist against Mexican immigrants and proposed violently expelling the children of Mexican immigrants who are American citizens back into Mexico because he claimed that they were stateless foreigners.
So I assume that you were braced for this Kamala Harris birther thing.
Well, you know, when I first saw the piece, I have to say I felt nauseated, because I knew that there was a chance I would have to respond. And I've written about this issue a great deal. And I fear that even responding to these theories is like giving more oxygen to the fire, because it creates this illusion that there's a debate here and the debate has to have two sides. And there just isn't another side to this issue, right? The birther claim is a lie, full stop. It is as easy to debunk as somebody who says 2 + 2 = 10. And still, Newsweek publishes this piece, which means we're going to be talking about it. It's going to spread like wildfire across all of the conspiratorial Facebook pages that Mark Zuckerberg refuses to shut down. And it's going to become an issue that dogs Kamala Harris, just like the Obama birther lies dogged Barack Obama. I mean, at one point, 25% of respondents to a poll said that they questioned Barack Obama's citizenship. These things may sound ridiculous, but they do gain a purchase.
You know, we are so much more divided now as a nation than we were even during the last campaign or the one before that. I'm just wondering whether this is just meat to a base that has committed itself long ago to the presidency of Donald Trump, and whether it'll just sort of bounce off people who don't support him or independents.
This lie about birthright citizenship, it has implications way beyond this presidential election. There are at least 18 million children born of immigrants in the United States right now. If Eastman were correct, which he is not, then all of those people are stateless, who could be stripped of citizenship, stripped of all of their rights and privileges, and violently expelled from the country. That is extremely frightening. I mean, that is a white nationalist fantasy. And the fact that a law professor and someone affiliated with a think tank can promote it in the pages of Newsweek suggests to me that we need to educate people and explain that American citizenship does not rest on your parents' allegiance to another country or this one. So I kind of hope that there are some people who haven't really thought about this, who are reasonable people, who can learn from the conversation we're having now and some of the articles that have been written in response to Eastman, that this has been settled since at least 1868, and that the next Black person who runs for president or vice president is going to have their citizenship challenged. And maybe we can shrink the group of people who buy into it next time around.
Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Mark Joseph Stern covers courts and the law for Slate.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast extra. Tune in for the show on Friday. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.